Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. On today's show, we're going to hear Dave talk about delegation. Yep, that place that so many leaders, so many owners struggle. Delegating things, delegating stuff, delegating processes, delegating tasks. We also have an incredible guest on the show, Stephen M. R. Covey, author of the new book, Smart Trust. He's going to talk to us about the trust aspect of delegation. My name is Chris Licurdo, and I am your host for the Entree Leadership Podcast. Now, last episode, we had our Q&A episode where we answered your questions. We want to know what you thought about that. We want to hear from you. Tell us what you think. But today, we're talking about delegation, how important it is, how vital it is to your leadership, to your business. So here is Dave speaking about delegation.
The problem with delegation is everyone starts with it. You notice we didn't start with it. We started with dreams, to visions, to goal setting, to time management, to communication. We've hired the right people and fired the wrong ones, gotten the right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus. We're creating an atmosphere, a changed organization with unity and loyalty. We're not dealing with gossip, and we don't have unresolved disagreements. You do all of that in order to create an atmosphere where you can delegate. When you try to delegate and all of those other things aren't done, you're going to run into the wall. Somebody's going to punch you in the face. I mean, you're going to have a problem. And so what happens is that happened to me. I mean, we start our business. It's small. There's six of us, and I'm delegating. But I hadn't done all of those other things. In other words, I'm saying, hey, would you take care of that? This is something I want you to do. And I turn my back. And then I'm shocked with all that other crap going on, lack of communication, the wrong person probably that I'm handing it to. I haven't spent enough time with them to know that they're delegatable. I haven't done anything right. And then I'm shocked that the goober didn't do his job. And I'm the goober. That's the problem. Because I didn't lay the foundation in place. So the problem with delegation is everybody tries to teach it or think of it as this lone subject over here. It's not the lone subject. It is something you build up to, and then when you set it on top, it fits. Then you can delegate. And you can delegate masterfully. Those of us that are control freaks, hard driving, would rather do it ourselves because we're better at it anyway, can even delegate. You know, I can do, I fit in there. I never thought of myself as someone who would be able to delegate. And I got to tell you, I am a fabulous delegator. It is one of my best leadership strengths. I am very good at it. I'm going to show you how right now. We build up to this point, and then we do these things. A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. Delegation is the most misunderstood and abused area of leadership. An entree leader can only delegate tasks, responsibilities, and concepts to a team member when both are mature. And I'm talking about emotional, spiritual maturity, the capacity to take personal responsibility. People who read QBQ and go, yeah. And if you don't have that, if they're 58 or if they're 28 or they're 18 or they're 8, you can't delegate to them. You're kidding yourself. You can't. It's hard to even delegate a gopher task. You know, go for this, go for that. You can't even do that until someone has the capacity to grasp that they now are responsible for something you just handed to them, and you have the capacity to grasp that you handed it to them. So back off. There's a process here. Stephen Covey talks about, in principle-centered leadership, a whole spectrum of delegation. He starts with the gopher level. I'm not going to cover the whole spectrum. I don't want to go into it. It's not the incremental pieces in between aren't that important to me. But the gopher level delegation and then management level delegation is the other end of the spectrum. So the very beginning point of delegation is gopher. The most complicated and in-depth is management. Gopher level delegation is when an entry level or a temp team member, you know, you're just saying go for this, go for that. That's all you're doing. This level of delegation doesn't require much except inspection to verify the task is completed. You know, make 7 copies of this, have them ready for the meeting. Make sure everybody's got coffee in there. Make sure we got hot coffee in there. Make sure the floor is mopped. You know, clean out the trash cans, whatever. I don't know what, I've done that kind of work. You've done that kind of work. Some of us do it now if we need to. But this is not a big complicated thing. It's here's an item, do the item, then you've accomplished the task. And Zig Ziglar says you can't expect what you don't inspect. And so you're just verifying that the task was done. Deliver this to there. Did it get done? If you delivered it to there, you did it. That's it. It's a very simple level of delegation, and it typically is not someone, you know, if you have people that stay at the gopher level, you might have a few of those, but most people move past that at least one notch at some point if they're going to be with you a while. Management level delegation is where you begin to really build a business that you run instead of the daily tasks running you. If you want to own more than a job, where you work on your business instead of just in your business, and when we all start with one or two or three people, we're, you know, and even to this day when I'm up here being the product, I just own my job. But when I delegate entire things, entire concepts to people, that's when I'm working on my business rather than just in my business. Management level delegation is the handing off of a concept, and all the details to pull that concept off are implied.
Once again, as I meet with leaders all around this country, as I meet with leaders that come to the Entree Leadership event that I do here in Nashville, the Entree Leadership event that we do out on the road, and speaking in all kinds of events, when this topic of delegation comes up, this is a struggle. It always is. It always is. And the reason is simple. You don't trust the person who's going to do the thing you're delegating. You don't believe that they have the ability to handle the task, the whatever, as well as you do. So therefore, you don't. Leaders, listen to me. Here's what you've got to understand. Delegation is a huge part of growing your business. If you can't delegate to somebody, if you can't delegate things to your team members, then what you got to realize is that you can't grow because you're doing too much. There's too much on your plate. You're trying to do all of these things instead of growing you and doing the more important stuff like leading the team, like setting them up for success. So this has got to be something that you move into. And I can tell you right now, we've got on the line Stephen M. R. Covey, author of the book Smart Trust, Creating Prosperity, Energy, and Joy in a Low Trust World. He's got a lot of great information. If you've not read that book, make sure that you get that book. Stephen M. R. Covey, a sought-after speaker and advisor on trust, leadership, ethics, sales, and high performance, and he speaks around the world on these topics. He is a New York Times and a number one Wall Street Journal best-selling author of The Speed of Trust, The One Thing That Changes Everything. He is the former CEO of Covey Leadership Center, which under his stewardship became the largest leadership development company in the world. And today, as Franklin Covey teaches trust in more than 100 countries. So please welcome to the show, Stephen M. R. Covey. Welcome, Stephen. So glad to have you here.
Thank you, Chris. Delighted to be on this show.
We love what you've put out. Obviously, we love your dad, Stephen Covey, great author, great book, great information, but you have been out there knocking it out of the park. You've got two incredible books out there, Speed of Trust and Smart Trust, and you've been absolutely killing it. We love this information, so it is a joy to have you on the show, so thank you again for being here.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm honored because I really admire what you and Dave and your organization is doing. It's very exciting.
Well, thank you very much. Now, Stephen, we're talking about delegation. That's what this episode is all about. And I know you've got some incredible information on this. This topic of delegation, we believe, is one of the most misunderstood and abused areas of leadership. Do you agree? And if so, why?
I certainly do agree. And it's especially for entrepreneurs that are so talented, so capable, and make things happen themselves. Sometimes they're such a producer, sometimes we don't move into the realm of delegation, which enables us to multiply ourselves, in effect, and to expand our influence and to increase our leverage and to really grow our business beyond our own individual capacities. And that's the great strength of delegation, is that we can do so much more and accomplish so much more and have such greater influence and leverage done well. And yet it's natural for entrepreneurs that are so effective and so good at what they do to want to make sure that it's done well and right. And And so that's why it takes some trust to be able to delegate. And we want that trust to be wisely placed, because if we delegate responsibilities to people that aren't capable of handling it and taking it on, then that may not turn out the way we want, and we might kind of pull the pendulum back to the other side and saying, you know, I just got to do it myself. But if we really learn how to delegate very effectively to people, where we delegate responsibilities as well as guidelines and resources and accountability, and we've also helped trained and mentored, so it's such that the trust is well placed, it's amazing how people will respond to that trust in the form of delegation. And they'll rise to the occasion, it brings out the best in people, and they perform well, and we'll get better results, we'll build the capacity in the organization, but also we have more capacity to continue to leverage and grow in the future. So there's a lot of great things that flow out of delegation, but I agree with the basic premise that often it's misunderstood and maybe abused along the way. But if an entrepreneur can get good at this, then it opens up all kinds of possibilities that just are not open to people if they don't understand how to delegate.
Absolutely. And that goes both ways.
When
you can trust the person you're delegating to, obviously that's great for you as a leader, as an owner. But when you're the person who's being trusted, I think that changes the way that you also, you know, you're able to do your work. Would you agree with that?
I agree completely, Chris, that nothing engages somebody like being trusted.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They want to prove the trust was justified. They want to rise to the occasion. There's always maybe a few out there that might abuse it. Mm-hmm. But the vast, vast majority respond to it. It motivates them. It inspires them. I like to put it this way. Trust is the most compelling form of human motivation. Mm. And delegation is a practice that demonstrates trust.
I love that, because it's so true. It is so true.
Yeah.
In your book, Smart Trust, you say we need to believe in trust, which, you know, when you say that, it's like, well, of course we do. However, it doesn't happen a lot. What do you mean by that, and how does trusting play a role in a good company becoming great?
Well, here's the idea of believing in trust. The notion that trust is a decision. It is a choice. And it's based upon believing that trust and trusting is a better way to lead. And that the idea that most people, not all, but most people can be trusted. If you start with those beliefs that most people can be trusted, and then they want to be trusted, and that trust is a better way to lead, that's a paradigm, that's a mindset where you're now looking for opportunities versus, say, a mindset of just absolute control, command and control, and not really believing in trust or in trusting people as a better way of bringing out the best. And so it's a mindset, it's a paradigm that we choose to believe in trust as a better way of leading and of operating and of managing. And the reason this matters so much is that the data is overwhelming that what really creates a great place to work and a workplace of choice, a great environment, a great culture, is mutual trust.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of factors obviously involved in a great culture, but 25 years of research from the Great Place to Work Institute shows this, that the number one defining characteristic of what makes a great place to work is mutual trust. That is, when bosses can trust their people and people can trust their bosses and people trust each other, there's trust in the organization. That engages people. It energizes people. People are clear in expectations. They perform. They deliver. It kind of perpetuates itself. You build a high-trust culture like that, the culture becomes the reinforcer of the desires of the organization, so that you don't need more rules and regulations to just throw on people. Instead, the culture becomes the enforcer. So if someone gets out of line, the culture brings them back in line or weeds them out, as opposed to having to say, well, gosh, now we got to put in these new policies and procedures because of the fact that someone violated something somewhere.
Right.
And many cultures in companies find themselves sometimes going down that path of becoming a rule-based company, a rule-based culture with just excessive policies and procedures, rules and regulations, because of the fact that they can't trust some. Far better to build a high trust culture and let the culture weed out those that can't be trusted. I look at Nordstrom as an example, the retailer clothing store. They operate on high trust. They delegate extensively to their people, and they really want to build trust with their customer, and they're known for great customer loyalty. Well, here's their basic approach. Their employee handbook is very simple. It's a single card, and on that card, it says, "Welcome to Nordstrom. We're glad to have you with our company. Our employee handbook is very simple. We have only one rule." So you turn over the back of the card, and it says, "One rule. Use good judgment in all situations. There will be no other rules."
Wow.
So that's an extraordinary expression of trust in their people and a great form of delegation. But the thing is, Chris, is they didn't just arrive at this. They built up to this. They built a culture. They mentored. They trained to get where people were ready to receive that kind of trust. And they hired for this, recruit for this, train for this, mentor, et cetera. But now they built such a high-trust culture, they don't need a lot of rules. They can allow the culture to weed out the offenders. Uh-huh. And that's a really phenomenal thing. And they get better results both with their customers and with their people internally. And the results also get translated into better economics.
And there's no fear.
And there's no fear.
When there's a trusting relationship going both ways, when there isn't trust, fear sets in so many different forms. I mean, there's fear of losing your job, fear of your leadership not doing you right. There's so many different ways that sets in. So I can totally see how when it's going both ways, it creates such an amazing culture. General Patton once said, "Never tell people how to do things. Tell them what to do, and they will surprise you with their ingenuity." What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see leaders making when it comes to delegating?
I think the number one biggest mistake is that they delegate activities, not results. In other words, they delegate specific activities, but not the end result too often.
I love that.
And again, sometimes that's okay if the basic level of delegation is go for delegation, meaning, you know, go for this, go for that. If it's someone to help you out, that's fine to delegate activities.
Sure.
But if it's someone that you're bringing on to be a contributor in powerful ways, unique ways, and to use their strengths, then it's far better to delegate the result. You know, here's what we're after. Here's what we're trying to do. I want you to get the sale. And see, the activities might be to get that sale. I need to make these phone calls and follow up on these leads or something. But if I just say, look, the goal is to follow up on the leads, and they might come back to me and say, "Hey, I followed up in the leads, but nothing happened. You know, what do you want me to do now?" Instead, the goal is make the sale. Now, here's some guidelines and some resources for you. You got these leads. I would follow up on them if I were you, but the goal is to make the sale. So you want to delegate results, not just activities, especially if it's more stewardship delegation that you're giving as opposed to gopher. Now, both can be useful, and that gopher delegation is not necessarily bad. It's just not the ultimate. It's kind of the entry point and a starting place.
Sure.
And that can be helpful for an entrepreneur to have some, quote, gophers, people that can carry out and execute exactly what you want to do by activities. But it's also great to be able to delegate to people where you delegate the stewardship, the responsibility for the result, and not just for the activity, and allow people to use their creativity, like General Patton was saying. They'll use their creativity, their ingenuity, they'll find ways to get it done. And you might want to, you know, give guidelines like within ethical guidelines, you know, find a way to make the sale and let people rise to the occasion. And so I see that as a big issue, delegating activities instead of results. Another mistake people make is they're unclear on expectations. So that people aren't quite sure what it is that they're trying to do, what the outcomes are, what they have to work with.
They don't know what winning is going to look like.
That's right. What's it going to look like? Within what limits, what guidelines, and then how they're going to be accountable for it. And sometimes they're just not clear on expectations. And then finally, that last point is another key element. Sometimes there's unclear accountability. It's not clear of what's the process of reporting back. But if done well, stewardship delegation includes not only delegating results, but also a process for accountability so that it's not you hovering over them and coming back and say, okay, now let me check on how you're doing. In stewardship delegation, it's them coming back to you, reporting on how they are doing against the criteria that and the expectations that you mutually agreed upon. Now, that's powerful when you get to that point. And again, these are kind of levels that you move to with different people and different groups in the organization.
What I see so often, and I love what you just said about especially the activities, not results. I see so many people that do just exactly that. They delegate just the activities. And mm-hmm. what happens is that you don't get buy-in from a team member. What you get is somebody who's going to do a task. But like you're saying, if you're delegating the results to this, if they're getting both, hey, this is what your goal is, go do that. Now, what are the steps to make that happen? Then they get buy-in on, oh, okay, I have something to do with the outcome.
That's right.
Which is much bigger than just the activities.
It's much bigger. You get greater buy-in. You also get a greater sense of responsibility because suddenly they're responsible not to perform, not just like, you know, you're still responsible, boss. I didn't mean to tell me it didn't work. And so, no, this allows for greater growth and opportunity. And you hit it, Chris. They will buy in more. They'll be more engaged and energized by it.
Yeah. And then the other thing I always tell leaders, this is so confused in our culture. I tell leaders all the time, your job is to make your team successful. Your job mm-hmm. is not to tell them what to do or hire them to go do something and just wait for them to do it correctly. Your job is to make them successful. So like you were saying, the stewardship delegation, your job is to, you know, you need to make sure that they are coming to you. You need to make sure that they have everything that they need to be successful so that they can report back to you what they've done well. So I think just that alone is going to change a lot of leaders today that are listening to this because, again, delegation is one of those things that's been so confusing for so many. So we have a saying around here, you have to inspect what you expect. You cannot expect something if you haven't inspected it. So how can a leader be careful they aren't micromanaging but still thorough when checking a team member's work, their progress, their projects, their stewardship delegation?
Yes, I'd say three key things for doing that. The first is to declare your intent right up front. Declare your intent. Hey, here's my agenda. Here's my motive. And give the why behind the what so that people know what you're trying to do and why and what your agenda motive is and why. So that there's not a hidden agenda. It's an open agenda. You're transparent. There's nothing to hide. You're not trying to micromanage them and hover over them. You're just trying to ensure that we're all performing. And so declare your intent as to your agenda and to your motive. Otherwise, people kind of assume intent or they guess or they ascribe intent and motive to you. And they might feel like, gosh, now Chris is or Stephen is hovering over me and trying to micromanage me because he doesn't trust me. And so you don't want people ascribing motive to me or agenda. Instead, I'd rather declare my intent right out explicitly. Here's what I'm trying to do. Here's why. Help me do this. But know my motive. Know my intent. That's helpful because it affects people's interpretation then of what we do. So declare it right up front. And it's also a great test of what is my agenda? What is my motive here? Because I'd have a hard time declaring an agenda that was self-serving or something.
But, right.
But that's a great test. That's the first step. The second thing is I come back to this whole notion of clarifying expectations. And the more clear we can be in those expectations up front, the easier it is to have all this well known. For instance, if up front we say, now, here's what we're expecting and wanting, and here's a process for seeing how we're going to see how we're doing. In other words, you clarify it up front so that when I come back and inspect a little bit, that's not seen as a violation of our agreement. That's seen as, hey, we agreed to this, that we're going to check up on this way. And so, you know, Stephen's just doing exactly what we agreed to,
right.
Not, gosh, he doesn't trust me, he's micromanaging me. And so you might up front clarify expectations mutually. It's not just a one-way street of expectations, you know. It's two-way. Does this work for you? You know, is there a way to do this better? That way we have clear expectations. And then tied to that would be the third point, and that is to really practice accountability. And in those expectations, if you can set up an accountability process where not only it involves you in being aware and looking and, quote, inspecting what you expect, but also where they anticipate that, where you really do shift the locus of responsibility to them to be accountable against the objectives we mutually created together on how we're going to do it. And that they come back and report. And it may be that what a greater thing if that they come back and report on the very things that it is that you would want to inspect. And they're giving you the report because it's clear of what's important to you and why, and that there's a process for accountability on that. And they lead out with it as opposed to you coming in and say, okay, I'm going to check on how you're doing. But if they came back and said, here is a report on how I'm doing against the criteria that's so important to you. That is even more powerful because, again, you engage your person, your employee, and they get energized by it, and they buy into it, and you'll get their greater creativity and innovation.
My goodness. The thought that you can delegate all of a project, delegate all of these pieces, declare your intent, clarify your expectations, and the accountability comes back to you in, hey, here's what I'm doing because here's what I know what you expect. The thing that you're saying is the thing that people struggle with so much, and that's just clear communication, clarifying what it is that you're actually wanting, because that's not what we do with when we delegate. When we delegate, we say, here's a job, go do this. Here's a task, go do this. But you've set it up in such a way that it's not fail-proof, but it's very close to it. It's very close. So I love that. I love those three steps. How do you, let's switch a little bit and go, we're looking at the setting up the perfect situation, or not the perfect situation, but a really good situation. How do you delegate and trust your decision-making and trust the delegation process if you're in a very unpredictable or tumultuous situation, if things aren't so good, if leadership hasn't been good, if the team member hasn't been good? How do you then do it? How do you make it work in that type of situation?
Yes, if it's tumultuous or unpredictable, then you may need to spend more time in the process of either increasing the credibility of the people that you're delegating to. In other words, if you can't trust them because they're not trustworthy, then that's an issue. You've got to increase their trustworthiness either in terms of their character or their competence. Now, it's harder to improve in character if they're not honest, for instance. That's not going to work. But in terms of you can help people improve their character in terms of their intent and their motive and their ability to collaborate and partner and work with people, but also on their competence, that they got to have the right skills. And so in times like that, it may be that there needs to be some development of the credibility and the competency of people in order for you to have greater trust. The flip side of that is that sometimes the times are so fast and we're moving that sometimes the best way to increase competency and capacity is to give people an opportunity. And so to maybe... So it's a little bit of the chicken and the egg of, you know, I don't want to delegate until I know you can do it. But the best way for you to gain the capacity to do it is to have a chance to work on it, to be delegated to. And so you got to sometimes...
Now, you do know how many people can't do that.
It's very difficult. And again, I'm not suggesting bold leaps of faith, you know, but rather considered judgments of extending some trust. Maybe not in the whole area, but maybe in one area. Maybe I can't trust you to run the whole project, but maybe I can trust you on this dimension of the project, and in that I'm going to extend significant trust. And here's how I delegate, stewardship delegation on that. And then as that person proves what they can do, I'll give them more responsibility, and then more and more. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. We don't have to swing the pendulum to, you know, all complete delegation all the time with everyone. No, you know, or I do it all myself. No, there's degrees and grades all along the way. And that's not only true with a leader, but it's true with each person the leader interacts with and works with. But the premise is, I want to trust my people. Because if I can build trust, we'll get better results, and we'll increase the capacity, and they'll be more engaged. And I can leverage myself. But I've got to be smart about it. And that's the whole idea of smart trust, is I can't just get out of blind trust where I just indiscriminately trust anyone and everyone. But I also don't want to not trust people because of the fact I can't trust some. And delegation flows right out of that. I want to delegate wisely. But the ideal scenario is that I build enough capacity and enough trust that I can delegate with clear expectations and also with a process for accountability built in, such that I'm like Nordstrom. It becomes, you know, use your good judgment, and that enables you to really be agile in fast moving times and to move with incredible speed. Nothing is as fast as the speed of trust, and if we can get trust operating, and delegation is a great expression of that, then that that gives us the capacity to, you know, be agile, to ebb and flow, and to make decisions quickly where you have to sometimes trust people that are in the moment, in the field, with the people. But it's a process of getting to that. So I'm not Pollyannish on this and naive and just saying go out and trust everyone and delegate everything.
Sure.
You have to do it consciously. But at the same time, let's have this be in our mindset as a leader, as an entrepreneur, that the first job of a leader is to inspire trust, but the second job is to extend trust, and I extend it through this delegation process.
I think that probably may be the most powerful thing in this interview right there, because that's what I see all the time is the reason why people don't delegate, and I was this person as well, the reason why people don't delegate is because they're not willing to take, as you just said, I love this, consider judgments of extending trust. They can't get there, and that is such a big struggle. So for you folks listening today, that is just pure gold. This whole thing is gold. That is outstanding. Stephen, if there's one thing, and we just got just a second left, if there's one thing that you wish you would have known early on, what would it be?
I wish I would have known what has become my life's work, and that is the power of trust in business and in life. I've always known it. I think most of our listeners know it. They get it. You know, trust, of course, is important. But it's so basic, so foundational, so fundamental that we overlook it. We assume it. We take it for granted. We neglect it. We ignore it until we lose it. Mm. And then we become painfully aware of it. And what's happening in our society today is there's a loss of trust everywhere we turn, and a loss of trust in people and institutions and organizations. And that permeates our culture. And the danger of that is that kind of we all become a little bit more cynical, a little bit more distrusting, because none of us want to get burned.
Right.
But the danger with that is that trust is reciprocal. And when we don't trust others, they cannot trust us either. And we perpetuate a vicious downward cycle. But trust is so powerful. It's contagious in either direction, including in the positive direction. When we extend trust and give it, people receive it and they return it. Mm. They reciprocate it. And so that's one of the great things about delegation is it's an extension of trust. And when you give trust, not only will you increase capacity, not only will you get greater outcomes, greater results, not only will you engage your people, but you'll also increase trust back. Why? Because they will extend trust back to you for having trusted them. It is reciprocal. Trust is really the one thing that changes everything. And in a sense, I've always known that, but it's really in the last several years that I've become crystal clear that this is the performance multiplier that makes everything that we do better. All these principles, all these ideas are operationalized and really accelerated and multiplied positively when there's high trust. So all the things that you need to do as a leader, as an entrepreneur, if you do them with an environment of trust, if you're trusted, you'll get a performance multiplier that'll make everything better. If you're not trusted, it's a tax, it dilutes, discounts everything. So to focus on trust as a leader is so high leverage because of how it will affect every other competency that you have. Mm-hmm. And that really is why I believe that trust is the one thing that changes everything. And delegation is a tremendous demonstration of that trust in our people.
Nice. Love it. Stephen, thank you so much. How can listeners, the people that are listening, find out more about you, what you offer, where can they get your books, all of that stuff?
Yes, well, books should be everywhere in bookstores, online, Amazon, and BarnesandNoble.com and the like. Speed of Trust and Smart Trust. Smart Trust is the new book just out. And they also can go to speedoftrust.com, and we have a whole variety of tools and resources. You can get the books there, but a lot of other tools and resources that your listeners might find to be of value to help them understand how to increase trust in order to be able to delegate more effectively and to also be able to manage and lead the way that they want to. They will get greater outcomes.
Mm, thank you so much. What an incredible interview. Thank you for taking the time to help our listeners, to help us grow. change their lives. So thanks again for coming on the show.
You're sure welcome, Chris. It's an honor for me to be on it. My best to you and also to Dave.
Thank you, sir. Stephen M. R. Covey, ladies and gentlemen. Whew, man, these interviews are just killer.
Hey, I just want to interject and say, I'm sorry. I want you to know that I trust you to buy lunch for me now. It's a mistake I've been making, and I won't make it again.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. I don't know if I trust myself, though. See, I'm going to have to work on that. Give me some time, maybe 5 years. Wow, where do I start? Dude, I know you're taking notes in there. What'd you get out of that?
Oh, like of all the interviews we've done, like the one thing he said, like there's a lot of great stuff and all the stuff, but the one thing he said to me that I just is the best thing I've heard in all the podcasts we've done so far is don't delegate activities, delegate results.
Ugh.
How many times do you just say, I need you to do this and you do this and you do this, but you don't say, I need you to get this result from doing this?
Yeah. I mean, seriously, if you think about it, if you've got trust in people, if you've got quality people, if they are okay, and again, like I say, it is still your job to make sure they're successful. It's your job to make sure that they've got everything they need. But if you delegate the result, they will figure out the activities. It will fall in line. They will do whatever it takes to get to that result, because that's the ultimate goal. And again, it gives you absolute buy-in from your team members.
So. And I thought, it was interesting that he said the problem is we're selfish. We're so much producers, and we want the credit sometimes that we fail to just give people trust and let them get results.
Yeah,
and we can't do as much. I was thinking, hey, does eBay even exist if there's not a trust level out there?
Right, no doubt.
If you walked up to somebody and said, hey, I got an idea for this website. I want them to send me stuff, and I'll send them money. I've never met them. They live in a different part of the country. It's going to work. I promise. It's going to be great.
You're like, yeah, I don't think so. Three things as far as you're delegating: declare intent, clarify expectations, practice accountability. I loved what he was saying. As you do these things, then your team members actually come to you and tell you what they've done towards the goal. And then the other thing that it just was fantastic. I loved it. Consider judgments of extending trust. This is something that when I meet with tons of leaders, this is the reason why they don't delegate. Is because they don't trust. They don't know. They think that only they can do it as good as it's going to get done. And the person they're going to give to is going to fail. You have to give somebody an opportunity.
And Chris, what stuck out to me about that is when you don't trust, you don't get trust back.
Right. Oh, absolutely. If I don't feel trusted, then I can't respect you. I can't trust you. It makes me feel like, why am I here? So, whew. Stephen M. R. Covey, author of two great books, Speed of Trust, Smart Trust. Make sure that you get those. Folks, you have got some incredible stuff right there to go implement today. So those are our takeaways. We hope that you got a lot out of that. We hope that you're going to take that information, change your life, change your leadership. As always, we want to hear from you. A couple ways we can hear from you through Twitter, at Entree Leadership, at ENTRE Leadership, or at Chris Licurto, CHRIS. LOCURTO. Send us your emails at podcast@entreleadership.com and make sure that you visit us over at chrislicurto.com. Well, that puts another incredible Entree Leadership podcast in the books. Don't forget, if you want more information about Entree Leadership, the events that we're teaching, go to entreleadership.com. You can see my event at entreleadership.com/Nashville. Whew, what a great day. What a great podcast. As always, I got to say some thank yous to the people who make this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our producer. Colin Fatke, our audio genius. Becky Powell, our decision-making queen.
Mm-hmm. How about Becky Powell, our director, administrator of trustworthiness?
Nice. Obviously, Stephen M. R. Covey and Dave Ramsey. Folks, take this information, get out there, change your life, change your leadership, change the way you live. We cannot wait to see you on the next Entree Leadership Podcast.
Hey, this is Daniel Tardy with Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Master Series event. This event offers personal leadership coaching from our executive team, in addition to Dave teaching you his entire business playbook. We're thrilled to announce that our next event will be at the gorgeous Westin La Paloma Resort in Tucson, Arizona, May 6th through the 12th. Our last event sold out early. These events always sell out early because they're limited to 200 people. So if you want to lock in a seat, you better call our team today at 888-227-3223. Just ask for me, Daniel Tardy.
Folks, right now couldn't be a better time in history to operate or start a small business. If you're ready to take your leadership to the next level or start your own company, then join me, Dave Ramsey, for the one-day event based on my New York Times number one bestseller, Entree Leadership. At Entree Leadership One Day, I'll teach you everything you ever wanted to know about building and growing a business. Get your seats now at DaveRamsey.com or call 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223.
Running a business is not for wimps. If you lead people on a daily basis, you know how tough it is. You want your team to enjoy coming to work every day with the same level of passion you have. How can you do that? We've got three ways. John Acuff, Chris Hogan, and Chris Licurdo. These speakers travel the country inspiring business audiences, both large and small. They're not only endorsed by Dave Ramsey, they're on his team. They live and breathe Entree Leadership. They get it. And they know how to get it across to your people in their own unique styles. They'll share practical, proven, easy to understand principles that will impact how your team sees their work and, more importantly, how they see themselves. This is real life stuff straight from the trenches. Dave's company has won Best Place to Work in Nashville 5 times in a row for a reason. You can win too, but you have to be intentional about it. Call our speakers group to schedule John Acuff, Chris Hogan, or Chris Licurdo today. Call 888-284-2488. That's 888-284-2488 or online at DaveRamsey.com/speakers.